Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes on the hillside, little boxes all the same.
This is Shelby Pierce.
And Ike Rayford.
And this is We Are Not a Monolith. Today we have a very special guest with us, my friend Natalie. Welcome, Natalie.
Hey, Natalie.
Hey.
So we've asked Natalie to come onto our show for a series that we're starting called Checking the Box. So you're 28 years old, and do you have any kids?
I have one daughter. She just turned 5 here in January.
She's getting ready to start school, right?
Yeah, she just had her graduation yesterday from preschool, actually.
Oh, she did.
Yeah.
Has your daughter gone to her kindergarten roundup yet?
Yeah, we did our kindergarten registration last month.
So were there any boxes that you had to check for Adelaya?
Yeah, actually, there was a lot of them. There was a few pages with 2 or 3 boxes on most of the pages, actually.
Okay.
You know, there's the race one. There's the, are you Latino or Hispanic?
Right.
There's, do you speak Spanish? And then it goes into, like, you know, is it the primary language or the secondary? Okay. And you have to list what languages they speak.
Did you have to check a box for you, or did you have to check a box for your daughter?
For my daughter.
Okay.
Yeah. Usually, I write what's closest to her race, I guess.
Right.
And once we got to the Hispanic, you know, I'm Latina, so
okay.
Of course I checked that box for her also. And then you have to go into the, do they speak Spanish? And then yes. And then you have to list their first language, and then their second. And her first language, I always write English because she really only speaks English to me.
Okay. Gotcha.
And then her second language is Spanish because my parents, she speaks Spanish to them.
So when she's with her grandparents, she speaks Spanish.
Yeah. She just refuses to speak Spanish to me, really.
Gotcha.
No matter how much I speak to her, she'll only respond
in English
to me.
To you.
And you did say your daughter was mixed, right?
Yeah, she's mixed. Okay.
Did you feel like at any point in the day that checking that box had an impact on what would happen for your daughter for school?
I did. I regretted it when she left my side and came back. I thought they were going for like a little tour in the hallway because I was busy with the paperwork. Yeah, another teacher came and took her. And so I just continued with the papers. But that's when they went to test her because they do the hearing, you know, the side. And then they do apparently the rest, like academic. And once she came back is when they told me, you know, that she didn't pass the test by about 3 points, I think. The English test.
How did that make you feel?
Well, I was really confused at that moment because I didn't even know she went to take that test. And then when she came back, I just said, why? Yeah. That's all I could say.
Yeah.
Why didn't she pass?
So did they tell you what was on the test? Or?
They didn't tell me what was on the test. I asked because I was really confused. I really didn't understand why. Like, I didn't know what they had asked her or if she was even comfortable. I didn't really understand what was going on until after they came back and tested her. They gave me some paperwork to sign in order for her to be in the ESL program in kindergarten.
Okay.
They said that because she didn't pass that test and it was only by a couple of points, they said that she would have to be in ESL when she starts kindergarten in the fall. And that they would only take her out about 30 minutes each day so that she wouldn't fall behind. And that after the fall, come January, they would retest her. But she would have to be tested in 2 other different tests. So on top of passing this one that she just failed, she would have to pass 2 other in order for her to be taken out of the program. So I was just really confused. I asked them what were the difference between that test and the next 2 that she had to take.
Yeah.
And they said, well, that it was going to be more math and all that extra stuff that she was supposed to be learning during that time of the year. So after all that, they had me sign the paperwork so that I would give her permission. But I didn't know that it was an option at that moment because they just said.
So I have 2 questions for you.
Okay.
One, so ESL is English as a second language.
Yeah.
Right? Now, your household, you speak English.
Yeah.
So
part of the confusion that I'm hearing that's going on is that you know your daughter to be a strong English speaker, just like you are.
She is actually more proper in her English than I am, because every month we learn like 2 to 3 big words, you know, like translucent and fantastic and frustrated. She always uses those words because if she hears something, she'll bring it back home and she'll want an explanation.
Exactly.
You know, instead of saying that she's angry, she'll always say, I'm frustrated. I am frustrated.
She's frustrated.
You know, even her teachers are always telling me, you know, she always pays attention to these words that she doesn't know what they mean.
Right.
So she uses proper English all the time.
So that's where the confusion comes in.
Yeah.
Over the situation.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm getting a little personal here, but did you take ESL? Okay.
I did, but my situation was different. My mom didn't speak English in the early 90s. So I only learned Spanish. So when I went to school, I was in the ESL program.
Right.
So I could learn English.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because it was a second language, right?
Exactly. But she understands both and she knows both, but her daily life is English.
So how did that make you feel as a parent? Do you have concerns around her taking ESL when she's speaking English as her first language?
Yeah. At first, it didn't sit well with me because I left there confused about the whole situation, you know? Mm. They assured me that she wouldn't fall behind and that it would be good for her and all the good things that a parent wants to hear. But, like, we had that parent-teacher with her current teachers is when I brought it up to them. And I asked them because it was still bothering me. And that's when her teachers told me that she, one, is the most well-spoken kid in their class. Two, they have to help her with her work because she's done everything else. Otherwise, she'll get bored, you know? They have to give her a little bit more so that they can challenge her. And after that is when her teacher told me that I need to go to the principal of the school that she's going to go to and tell them that I don't want her in there. And that I would probably have to jump through some hoops, she said, because this happened to her daughter. And that's when she told me that the schools usually need funding for their programs.
Gotcha.
And that's probably why they put my daughter in there. But that it would affect her that she had to fight for a full year to get her daughter out of the ESL program because she didn't need it and she was falling behind in her normal class.
Right.
Hmm.
So that's when I got upset and concerned and really just sad because I work really hard to keep her learning outside of school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I work with her vocabulary, with her math skills. You know, I try. So for that to happen, and I felt like all that hard work of me trying to be a good parent was going to get thrown out the window. So I got really mad or frustrated, as she said.
Absolutely.
So in that moment, would you say that your trust for the system shifted?
It did. It really did. Because I felt like my daughter's needs weren't really important.
Mm.
I felt like, how is she supposed to succeed and learn and get ahead if she's gonna be having to jump through these obstacles at such a little age? A 5-year-old shouldn't fall behind because of something that's out of her control. You know, she goes to school, she learns, and she really, really tries to learn. So,
but like you said, I think it's so frustrating when you check a box because it's there,
mm-hmm.
and then that box is in so many ways used against you or not to help you. And so how does that make you feel about that?
Do you think about it now?
I mean, do you think about it?
I do. I always do. I always do in other situations, but I didn't take it so personal as now. Like, now I'm hurt by it. I'm just sad every time I see it. It's heartbreaking. All I could think about is that's just going to discourage her to fall behind in her normal class. It's just going to discourage her. It's just going to make her feel like she's working so hard. You know, she can't catch up. As opposed to if she's right on it and learning, and she'll just want to continue to learn like she is now. That was what really broke my heart. Especially after I talked to her teachers. You know, they were very encouraging and very helpful in the steps that I need to take. And they reassured me that I can't let it go.
Right. Well, thank you so much for coming on our show and talking about that. We really, really appreciate the insight. This is Shelby Pierce.
And Ike Rayford.
With We Are Not a Monolith on Siouxland Public Media.
Cindy, Mama, you understand that?
No.
Well, like, I don't understand how you can, because, like, I've been to, you know, Paris, Beirut, you know, I've been to Iraq, Iran, Eurasia, you know, I speak very, very fluent Spanish. Todo está bien, chévere.
Chévere.
Chévere. Is that right, mama? Yeah, because I got my shaking room.
Everybody's got a thing, but some don't know how to handle it. Always reaching out in vain, just taking the things not worth having. But don't you worry about a thing. Don't you worry about a thing.
Well, that was Natalie, and we thank Natalie for coming on and talking to us about her experience with Check in the Box.
That's right. Yeah. So continuing with our series, Check in the Box, next we're going to talk about criminal history. So the over-incarceration of adults has severely damaged generations of families. Approximately 12-13% of the American population is African-American.
Right.
But they make up 35% of jail inmates and 37% of prison inmates, according to the U.S. Department of Justice.
Wow. And you know, statistics go along with that. They say that one out of three black males will be arrested and sent to prison during their lifetime.
Oh.
Well, yeah, that's crazy. One out of three, if you can think about it. And then also they say that between the ages of 20 to 34, one out of nine will be in prison or, you know, I mean, that's just crazy. But yeah. We did catch up with Arthur Black Top, and he's going to talk to us about his experience with the system and checking the box.
We were hoping that you would share with us a little bit about your experience around checking the box in your own life, and whether that's impacted you or whether you have feelings that that's labeled you or not.
Yeah, I mean, I went to prison at 18. Almost 19 years old.
Wow.
And I didn't come home until I was 26, right? So
that's a lot
what
of years.
Happened was basically like a culture shock when I came home, because what I found was that not only was it nearly impossible to find a job, and when I say a job, I mean a desirable job.
Right, right.
Not only was it next to impossible, but when I left the streets, you know, you could give somebody, you can give an adult money and say, hey, go get me an apartment. It wasn't that easy anymore. You know, it was, you have to be on your grown man now, so you have to have your own. But what I found with checking that box was that as soon as you put, you know, have you been convicted of a felony?
Mm-hmm.
With a job situation, it was like, we're discussing the interview. And if you made it that far, then some people will give you an opportunity to explain your situation. But with apartments and with housing, like it was really rough, because their mantra was how do we know that you're not going to turn our apartment or our house into a dope house?
Right.
So that was an obstacle in itself. Gotcha. You know, just having somewhere to work and having somewhere to live or lay your head. Like with having to check that box, it was next to impossible, man. Huh. It was really rough.
How did you overcome that?
I moved.
Gotcha.
You know, and it's not to make light of the situation. It's just that I knew, like, my support system was here in Florida. You know what I'm saying? I didn't have a support system in Dallas. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I had friends, but I didn't have any real family.
Yeah.
You know, so what I did was I came home. And I sat down with my mom and we had a long conversation, and I told her, I was like, you know, I'm not absolutely certain, like, the steps that it'll take for me to get my life back on track, but I know I don't want to go back to prison.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, she basically worked with me, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, as she had always stated, she was like, you know, one thing about it is you might have a felony on your record, but education is undeniable. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I started to study, and I landed a job. Just before I left Dallas, I landed a job at a engineering firm.
I think people sometimes don't understand that when you are, you know, having to deal with something in your background, you,
right.
You know, like you said, you can go get
any kind of run-of-the-mill job, but as you seek to change your life, you're saying, hey, I want a good job. I want a job that's going to take care of, you know, the things that I want to take care of. Can you expound on what that feeling is at that moment that, you know, you're trying to get this desirable job and you don't know?
I give you a prime example. When I started the engineering firm that I was telling you about, right, you know, in where we're from, like, you know, when you see a brother in a button down and some Dockers and some, you know, some nice right. deck shoes, the first thing we say is, he must have a court date.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But I did that. You know what I'm saying? I put on my Dockers. I put on my button down. You know what I'm saying? And I put on my boat shoes. And I told my girlfriend at the time, I was like, man, I got to go and find a job. You know, I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, I got to find a job. So I left that morning, and I saw the ad in the paper. I sat in the McDonald's parking lot right across from Fair Park, actually.
Right.
And I was going through the newspaper, and I saw an ad for an engineer firm. And it was something that I had just started to dabble in. And I didn't have much experience, but I said, you know what? I'm gonna let my hard work speak for my, you know, speaks for itself. So I went and filled out an application, and the guy, his name was Ron Morgan. He was like, do you have time for an interview? I was like, sure. So he gave me an interview. You know, I aced the interview, and he was like, you know, I'm gonna give you a job for two reasons. I was like, why is that? He was like, number one, you seem like a very hardworking young man. He was like, you got some size to you. He said, you look like you don't mind working. And he was like, and number two, he was like, you know, you're on parole. He was like, so I know you need the job. Mm. He was like, so I want to hire you. And, you know, this is what I can start you off at. It wasn't a whole lot of money, but it was freedom money. Right. You see what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So, and I looked him in his face and I told him, I said, you know, I'll never quit on you. You know what I'm saying? I say, you'll have to run me off first. I don't believe in quitting. He was like, that's what I want to hear. And that was 19 years ago. Housing has been a whole different area, you know, and right. I won't lie, man, the feeling that I get, like it used to lead me to bitterness.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because I felt like, I was like, you know what? I'm checking this box and I'm being honest. You know, and I'm telling these people, like, listen, you know, I've been out of prison, you know, 5 years, or I've been out of prison 7 years by now. I've been out of prison 9 years by now. I've been out of prison 10 years by now. You know, I'm telling these people this, and they're still looking at me like, nah, we don't want you in our complex, or nah, we don't want you in our house. And my philosophy was, listen, you know, as long as you're getting your money, it shouldn't matter what my past is. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It depends on the present. You know, who I am right now. And the man that I am right now is not the little boy that I was in 1991.
Any time in life when who you are and who you're proving yourself to be is overlooked by something that happened so long ago, I can't right. imagine not being incredibly frustrated and bitter at that.
It doesn't only extend to jobs and housing. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's still places where they just won't allow me to go, even with my passport. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, there's certain countries that I'm just not allowed to go to, because if you have a felony conviction on your record and you check that box when you're filling out your passport papers, like, all of that is in your passport. So they know who you are before you even step off a plane or before you even board a cruise ship or whatever. You know, so it's certain things that you just can't do. When you have to,
you know, and I think I'm glad you brought that up, because as a writer and a novelist and an author, you know, your craft can lead you to so many things, but yet you have this judgment, you know, hanging over your head.
I was invited to do, it would have been a cruise for my wife and myself, but it would have been involving, you know, signing books and, you know, selling books and this and that, blah, blah, blah. So you know how many people that the cruise ship hold.
Yeah,
and at the
absolutely.
Time, I think I had like 6 titles. So if you can imagine what the average cruise ship holds, 3,500 people.
Right.
Times 6 titles, times $15 a book. Like, I went into math mode, you know. And again, it was like, nah, man. You know, like, we, you know, it'd be different if you were going here, but because you said you're going there, you can't go.
What are your thoughts as it relates to banning that box and, you know, just getting rid of it?
Even though I'm not a fan of it, I'm not a fan of having to check that box. Sometimes it's warranted.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, of course we know that, you know, no crime is greater than the other. Right. Not in my eyesight anyway.
Right.
You know, but at the same time, it has to be some kind of safeguard for the employers as well. You see right. what I'm saying? I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, you look at a person and just because they had, you know, they have a felony conviction on their record or they may have had some unfortunate circumstances during their youth, you know, that they don't deserve. But I'm saying there are some people out there in the world, let's be realistic, you know what I'm saying, that need to be banned
right.
from a whole lot of things.
Right.
You know, and so I'm not a fan of banning a box per se, but I'm thinking more along the lines of there should be a careful consideration given to individual circumstances.
Well, Top, we gonna hang up here, man. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Coming on and talking
indeed,
to us.
Indeed. It was nice meeting you, Shelby, man.
I could try to say I'm sorry, but that won't be quite enough to let you know pain that I feel, and it just won't let up. Oh, it feels like the sky is falling and the clouds.
And that was Black Top talking about his experience with banning the box, and it leads me actually to ask, you know, what are your thoughts on, you know, we've talked about checking the box and those experiences as it relates to race, yeah. criminal history, and those things, but Shelby, what do you think about the whole banning the box issue?
Well, Ike, you know, banning the box is a pretty interesting issue. I see from a person with criminal history why banning the box is why would there be a push for that. But something else with the idea of banning the box is that there are actual criminal histories that should be known that the public or a hiring manager or a housing official should know, right?
Right, but, right. Well, obviously, because if we're talking about, you know, with working with kids and those things, and we don't want, you know, certain people working with kids, but on the same token as, you know, Blacktop, when he was talking about, you know, he wants a real job, not just any job. Yeah. And so, you know, there's information that says that every year, you know, I mean, just in the state of Virginia, I know, because I was just reading this, and it said 200,000 people will be released from prison. And so those guys will be getting out. And not every one of those guys should just have to go work at a, you know, menial job that really doesn't pay anything so that they can take care of their family. Because at the end of the day, we still got to remember about that recidivism rate and people yeah. returning. And so with banning the box, the premise behind it
yeah.
is that so a person goes, he interviews, he gives all of his things, or she, whatever. And at that point, if the job or the employer says, hey, we like this person, let's hire them, then they do a background check. Now, I'm not so sure I like that idea because, I mean, I guess I want to know up front if you're not going to hire me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
because otherwise you're telling me that, hey, I like you. And I like what you bring to this, what you can bring to my company, but yet, oops, stop. So really, is it really, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things with criminal history and the building of trust inside of an interview and then the breaking of trust inside of a background check, right?
Absolutely.
And that's what, if we were to discuss the idea of banning the box, I think the aim of banning the box is that there could be a conversation that would happen
right.
around the background check to right. say, hey, you know, I'm the candidate that you want. now we need to discuss that this is my history, this is what happened, and then proof that you are no longer in criminal activity.
Absolutely.
Whatever that may be. So
true. Well, it's definitely a discussion we can go on and on about. But as promised, Shelby and I and our producer, Austin, we took a little field trip and went to go see the movie Girls Trip.
We did, yeah.
So you got to tell me first of all, before we dump into this, I graduated from Briarcliff University, and my professor, Mark Crowley, he taught this class visual presentations. And so I finally get to, and I guess we did do it with Get Out, but I get to, review a movie using those.
All right, exactly. All right,
but tell me, what was your take on it?
Ike gets to review a movie and then he throws me under the bus to do it. Uh-huh. Did you catch that?
Exactly.
I liked Girls Trip. It was really fun. It was really outrageous. It is an adult movie. Right. I would not recommend taking. I mean, your teenagers might want to go, but let me tell you, you're not going to want to be sitting next to a teenager when you're watching that movie.
Absolutely.
Some very grown-up things do go down in the movie. But it was funny, and it was also, I thought that it really spoke well to like the relationships between women, the supportive relationships Absolutely. Between women, and that tension to like, do I be honest about my stuff or don't I?
Right. I definitely got to know who you identify with. But the one part of the movie that I absolutely love is because that Queen Latifah and Jada Pinkett Smith, they were in, what was the movie? When they robbed the banks. It would come to me. But they were in a movie and they looked at each other like, okay, let's do this thing. And so I thought that was so funny. But definitely, I thought it was pretty interesting when Dina was like, hey, and she's just talking and clowning. And, funny. And she goes and pees on everybody. And then she says, hey, let's pray. I love it. So do you identify with anyone?
I didn't identify with anybody in the crew of four. I love Dina, though. She was so funny.
Oh, wasn't
so
she?
Funny. I've never expressed myself through the party atmosphere. So that's a little bit of foreign territory for me.
So we'll have to find three other girls and, call them up and then have them come get with you, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Well, earlier in the show, we did talk about your summer playlist. Come on, hold out on
us. Okay, all right. So what I'm listening to right now comes from another summer movie. There's a movie, Baby Driver.
Oh, I heard a lot about it.
Yeah, and this movie has a fantastic soundtrack. In fact, we've been sampling the soundtrack in some of our transitions over the show, over this hour. So for all our listeners, if you want to listen to some good, soulful music, look up the Baby Driver soundtrack. It will not disappoint.
I hadn't heard any of it, but then when you started playing a little bit, I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. But I did hear some reviews on it, and a great movie that I just got to check that out too, so I can add it to my repertoire.
That's right. Can you believe it's been an hour?
Oh my God, it has been.
So we have some people that we want to thank.
Absolutely.
For We Are Not a Monolith, we want to thank Ryan and Natalie and Top for being part of our show. Our listeners can go online, actually, to kwit.org. We'll have the full version. I don't know if you noticed, but we have a couple things that cut off. We'll put the full versions up online for you.
Absolutely. And We're Not a Monolith is a product of Siouxland Public Media. It is produced by Austin Pierce with editorial oversight by executive producer Mark Munger. And we have on the board Steve Stompy Smith. And thanks to the whole team at KWIT 90.3. Check out our podcast on iTunes titled We Are Not a Monolith.